Hello and welcome back to the ACE Personal Trainer audio lectures. I'm glad that you came back. Obviously glad you came back. So hopefully everything from chapter one made a lot of sense and you were able to get some good detail from that. And so now let's move on to chapter two. And like I said before in chapter one, I'm hoping that you did that you listened to the slideshow presentations, that you did the chapter assignments, and then you listened to the audio explanation of the chapter assignment, and then you did the chapter one quiz as well. So hoping you went through all of that. And now let's move on to chapter two. And chapter two gets into the ACE Integrated Fitness Training Model. Okay, so let's move on with that. And once again, if you need to take breaks and listen to just a little bit of this, just remember where you left off, what time frame you left off, and then you could always jump back on and listen to some more. So on page 35, getting into chapter two, you'll see that it talks about during the past 30 years, kind of what we've done. And this chapter is really good at getting into the whole explanation of the Integrated Fitness Training Model, IFT, which is ACE's representation of here's how you progress someone through certain phases of the exercise continuum. And so they start off by saying what we've done in the past. And we talked a touch about this in chapter one, but now we start getting into the evolution kind of the personal trainer as well of in our capacity. So you can see that it's evolved from an occupation that's really gone on clients who are often already fit, and now it's going to playing a key role in that healthcare continuum, which is really awesome that we're considered not a luxury anymore, but a necessity. And it really is getting to that point that we're seen as a necessity. So I think that's awesome. And we're helping a lot more of the aging and the people who are, once again, that word inactive that you'll see again and again. So that's our job, is to try to get people more active, to be healthier, make some positive lifestyle changes, things like that. And so we have to be able to work with diverse population, you know, multiple people of different demographics and things like that. And our research is really starting to catch up and give us a really a good idea and a leg up on that. So we're using a lot more evidence-based research and in programming and assessment compared to what we used to do of, well, it worked for me, so it'll work for the client. Now we're able to take different clients who we have never been in that situation and be able to have the knowledge to be able to train them. So that's the good thing, is no longer does it have to be the client has to do what the trainer knows because they've done it for themselves. And so the client has to kind of fit to what the trainer knows. Now it's the trainer can learn more specifically about all different demographics and staying within the scope of practice, be able to train them. And that's a cool thing for us. All right, so going into the second paragraph, and it talks about the science research and such, and you'll see that one of the highlighted terms, the first highlighted term in that second paragraph, is activities of daily living, so ADL. So activities of daily living, or you might think of it as active daily living. And that's one of the things we want to think about, is what benefit are we giving our clients, not just in the gym, but outside the gym? Because I can tell you that the majority of clients who I've had who have gotten injuries, it doesn't happen in the gym. It's not happening when they're in the gym. Because think about it. When you're in the gym, you're a lot more conscious about your posture, or you're a lot more conscious about getting yourself set to do a lift. So if you put weight on the bar and you're about to do a deadlift, yeah, I mean, you kind of know, I'm not just going to run up out of nowhere and lift it. I'm going to put my feet in the right place, get myself all set, get my hands in the right place. I'm going to take a few deep breaths. I'm going to do what I call bracing, and you'll learn more about that. And I'm going to try to then bend my knees, bend my hips, get down there, take a few more deep. You know, I'm prepping for this. That's not when people are getting hurt. It's mostly when they're outside the gym. So when we think about activities of daily living, we don't want them getting hurt reaching up in the cupboard and grabbing a can of tuna because now they tweaked their back because they weren't ready for that, or their body's not used to that motion. Or they twisted their knee and now they have a slight tear in the ACL because they had to stop the momentum so quickly because their keys fell and they wanted to catch them. So we want to think, what can we do in the gym to also help them outside the gym? And it goes even to hobbies. You know, your client wants to play golf and 9 holes of golf and they're tired. They're done. They just don't want to do anymore when they would love to do 18, but they just can't take it. So those type of things. Then it goes and talks about the importance of how to enhance, that we enhance cardiorespiratory fitness, and we know that's important for the heart. Balance, speed, power, coordination, strength, those are all things that trainers usually worked with only with the athletes, but they're realizing now, and this is good for us, it's cool, because I love working on strength, balance, and power, and speed, and reaction. It is a lot of fun, but it's a necessity for our clients. Oh, but Mark, what if I'm training someone who's like 60 years old and they just want to be able to live their life and maybe be healthier and lose a little weight maybe? Yeah, you can have them do the agility ladder. They're not going to blaze through it as fast as some other people, but you could still have them do a lot of the same movements because they're positive movements that the person needs. So it all depends on the progression and what the client needs. But don't think that you have to completely limit it because of a certain age or something like that. Okay, so let's move on to the third paragraph of page 35. At the same time, advancements in health coaching. And it really talks about the important things such as building client self-efficacy. And you will see that one in a later chapter. So I'm not going to go really into it now. I just know it's the person reaching their potential. And then fuel the program adherence. And adherence is just basically sticking to something. So we want the person to really feel good about themselves and the results and to adhere to the exercise routine. One of the things you have to realize is it's not easy for people. Remember New Year's, well, of course, remember New Year's, but sometimes you don't want to remember it. Sometimes you do, depending on the New Year's you've had, but let's move on. New Year's resolution. What's the biggest New Year's resolution? And I'm hoping that in your mind, you're thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to work out. That's what everyone says. This is the year. I know last year I tried it and I didn't. I stuck around for the first week of January and then I quit. But this is the year. And we hear that all the time. And we applaud that. We want people to think about that. But adherence, that's the tough part, is they go really, really, really hardcore and they want to exercise. So they push themselves and like 3 weeks in, they're good. 4 weeks in, they're good. 5 weeks in, they skip a day. 6 weeks in, they skip 3 days. 7 weeks in, they're skipping the weeks and now they're done. Okay, so adherence is one of the problems and that's where we come in as trainers. That's one of our jobs, is we have to make sure that we can change them so they love exercise or at least are seeing the results. Okay, and that's part of the adherence. How do we get them to stick to it, but also thrive in it? All right, table 2-1 on page 35. You can see that traditional training parameters versus contemporary training parameters. So the traditional ones, you see the things that we used to do is just cardio, just muscular strength, endurance, and flexibility, and that's really important, absolutely. But let's add to it. What else can we give the client that they would need that they weren't getting before from trainers? Okay. And you see contemporary training. So things like behavior change, metabolic markers. So what the performance is and how much they can tolerate with exercise, especially cardiovascular, movement efficiency, muscular strength. So those are some of the things. And when you look at these other things, balance, coordination, reaction time, speed and power, those are all things that help with our everyday life. They're no longer, well, I am an athlete, so I need that. No, it's also, I want to be able to sprint up a flight of stairs and not be winded or have my knee hurt. It's raining, so I want to sprint to my car and get at least less wet with the water than I would if I walked because I can't run or sprint. I'm walking on a sidewalk and I want to step over something. That's part of what being able to have reaction time, coordination, balance, all of that stuff. I want to be able to lift, a 40-pound bag of cat litter from my car into my garage. That's going to be muscular strength and then going even into endurance because I have to walk with it. So those are the things we have to think about. Do I have the flexibility and the coordination to be able to bend down, squat, and pick it up correctly so it's not just all lower back and knees? So we want to think of those things. So when you add those in, yeah, we have a lot that we can work with. It's no longer just, all right, well, cardio, muscular strength, endurance, flexibility, body comp. Now it's those other things. I can actually make it so you have less pain. Remember, we're not pain management, but in our head, we're thinking to about the client, I can get it so they have less pain when they work out because their knee always hurts, but their knee hurts. I know it's because the heels lift up and they're doing nothing but knee dominant squats. So I can help them work on that kind of stuff. Okay. And that will help them. They said they love gardening or landscaping. That will help them in that, because now we teach them how to properly move. So now they're not saying, oh, I can do 1 hour of what I love to do, and then my knee is hurting, my back is killing me. No, we can help work on their mechanical and their neuromuscular and really get it so they can just go all day with the things they love. And that's really part of that active daily living, is functioning not just with what you want to do and need to do, but what you love to do. So underneath that table 2-1, you can see the exercise professionals, that last paragraph on page 35, and it just talks about more of the physical activity guidelines. And let's go over to page 36 so we can just see a little bit more about that. And so it talks about the participation in structured exercise, and then some more of those guidelines that we should be getting 150 minutes of moderate intensity exercise or 75 minutes of vigorous intensity exercise throughout the week. And those are good suggestions, guidelines. And the sad thing is a lot of people aren't hitting that. And that's something that we need to really start doing, is promoting regular exercise. It shouldn't just be 150 minutes in a few days. It should be spread throughout the week. You should be getting that. So we don't want to just say, you know, 75 minutes in 2 days or 150 minutes in 2 days. We want to have them spread it out more. Now, with resistance training, yes, those you can get away with a couple days a week or more. But cardio, we want to try to spread it out. And I always tell my clients, I want you to do cardio 4 days a week. Why? Because it's your heart health, and it's really what you kind of, a lot of people measure their health by. Most people don't say, well, I can't lift that heavy box, I'm out of shape. But they will say, oh, I jogged, you know, down the end of the street and jogged back, and I'm out of breath, I'm out of shape. So that's why cardio a lot of times is that deciding factor if someone really thinks they're in or out of shape. But also cardio, think about your heart. And there's so many benefits that go with cardiovascular, but one of the things is your heart. You need to make sure your heart is working prime time. Yes, we want the muscles, all the other muscles in our body to work, but that heart is so important. And the whole cardiovascular system with our lungs and respiratory system, and also with circulatory system, and that all get, then all of that is so important. So those are some really, really important guidelines, and you should know those. That the 150 minutes a week of moderate, 75 minutes of vigorous intensity. And we'll get more into intensity as we go down, so you'll know what intensity means. Now, the second paragraph, actually, it might be the third. I guess it's kind of the second full paragraph, because on page 36, it has like one last sentence of the previous one, and then it goes into the other paragraph. So I'm going to say the second full paragraph in the middle, page 36, it talks about that ACSM again, which you'll see a lot, because those are the kind of the guidelines, the guiding body that sets a lot of these standards that ACE follows. One of the things that they start going into is your FIT VP that you'll see. So the guidelines that we follow are FIT VP, and those standing for frequency, which is how many days per week, intensity, either heart rate or one rep max percent. You know, just how hard should we be working? Time, how many minutes? Type, what type of exercise are you doing? Is it cardio? Is it resistance training? Things like that. Is it flexibility? The volume, that's how many sets, how many reps, or how many seconds that the muscle is under tension. Pattern, what type of pattern are you moving in? And you'll learn there's different patterns of movement and different patterns for exercise. And then the progression. We need to make sure we're progressing and not going too fast. So if we're loading too slowly, the client's not getting the results they could be getting in the time they could be getting it. If we're loading too quickly, you could hurt them, okay? Or they're just not going to get results because the body's not able to progress or adapt to it. So that's important too. And these are all guidelines, and some people will call them acute variables, but these are all kind of the guidelines that will help us in programming, okay? It talks about, in that second paragraph right after that FIT VP, you can see that it highlights some of those other keywords, obesity, hypertension, you know, like that. Well, those are all separate specific groups, which ACE will talk about. Here's some guidelines if you have people who fall into these categories. So don't panic and be like, what do I do with hyperlipidemia? I don't even know what that is. Or if I have someone with osteoporosis, can I work with them? That'll all be covered. And you can see it says, see chapters 12 through 15, they'll talk about that, okay? Now that last paragraph, I love how they start off with the sentence. So how does a personal trainer put it all together? Yeah, that's a great question, because even seasoned veteran, and experienced personal trainers. Now I've been doing this for like 20 some years, and I consider myself experienced, but I know people who have been doing it for like 30, 40 years. To me, they're the veterans. So it really is just perception. You know, someone who's their first year, they might look at someone who's done it 8 years and be like, wow, you're a veteran at this. So really it's perception. But even as you get into this, the longer you get into it, even you'll still have people who you look up to and say, they're a mentor of mine. They're the experienced. They're the veteran. You know, even if you've been doing it for a long time. Okay. So even what my point was that even seasoned or veteran client or trainers still, I'm not going to say they struggle, but they still feel a challenge with clients. Okay. So it will get easier, but then as you get deeper into it, the more you'll challenge yourself to how can I be better? So I know all of this stuff about osteoporosis. I know how to train clients with it. I've done it time and time again successfully. But you should always want to keep digging. How can I be even better at training clients with osteoporosis? Things like that, okay? So as it goes through the rest of that paragraph, it just talks about things that we can also improve. Flexibility, core balance, and things like that. Other things that we can take in through exercise programming. So going to 37. Neat little chart, but a neat little figure, but it's common sense, you could say. It seems like common sense. But they talk about it anyway just to make a point. And that main point is if you look at function, health, fitness, performance continuum, a continuum means that you could be anywhere on there. It doesn't mean that it's a progression where you're supposed to go one way. It means that here are four things, function, health, fitness, performance, and they're all connected somehow, very, very well connected. But your client can be anywhere in there. Okay, your client can experience a little bit of each. They do want to work on function, and they do need to work on health. They do want health and fitness, and they want performance. So all four of those are connected, and we need to figure out how do we get all four of those into our client's lifestyle without missing one or underemphasizing any one of them, okay? And this is not an actual performance continuum as far as a training method. And it even says that in the third paragraph, well, function, health, fitness, performance, continuum, blah, 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 goes on. It's not a training method. This is something, just a simple figure, that figure 2-1 with those four things, the four per function, health, fitness, performance. It's something we can look at and think, where is our clients in there? Do they have a little of each? And why do they not have something? Because each one is so important. Because think about it. If your client's functional and they can perform, but they don't have general fitness or their health, that's not good. So if they're overstressed, they're not getting enough sleep, they're eating the wrong foods, they might be able to perform, but really they're not fully healthy. Okay, so that's just an example of how they've kind of put it together. So make sure you do read this section, because anytime they have something like this, a continuum, there's a chance it could be on the exam in a simple fashion. Okay, so a simple question such as your client can perform with this and do this and this. What aspects of the function, health, fitness, performance continuum, or what functions of the continuum, a continuum, are they missing? Something like that. So anytime you see anything like this, just know that there's a chance it could be on the exam, but they ask it in a way that it's not just strictly, is this function, health, fitness, performance? It's in a way that you have to know this continuum in order to answer the question. All right, I really hope that made sense. All right, let's move on to 38. And here is something that you will see throughout the whole manual. It's the ACE IFT model, the Integrated Fitness Training Model. And it's really good that they have this, because as a trainer, you have to think, I know exercises, but how do I put it all together? I have a client who has this, they want this. What do I do? How do I put it all together? How do I even know what exercises to give them? How do I know how intense, how many sets, reps, rest period, and it gets crazy. That's what this is for, okay? So here's where you can take a deep breath and go, oh, good. This is where they teach me how to use the knowledge to put all the pieces together to create that awesome puzzle for my client. Okay, so introduction to the ACE Integrated Fitness Training Model, top of page 38. And really it starts to give you the introduction, and you can see that in that second paragraph where it starts, since its launch in 2010, this model that they've had since then, they've been around longer than that, but this is when they introduced this model. It keeps evolving. And I love that they keep evolving because they keep trying to say, what does the client need? And how does the client need this? And what do the trainers need as far as support and evidence and tools? And so they evolve this for us and for the client. This ACE IFT model has two training components. You can see right there, it even says ACE IFT model has two training components, cardio, muscular. Okay. But each one of those components has three phases that you'll take them through. And figure 2.2 at the very bottom left of page 38, there it is, right there. Know this, love this, memorize this. Okay. I don't think I need to do ding, ding, ding. It'll be on the exam. I guess I just did it. So, okay. It's done. This will be on the exam. All right. This is definitely going to be on the exam. So know this, love this, own this. But also you do want to know this because if you're writing routines eventually for a client after you completely dominate the exam, you don't want to have to keep going back and thinking, oh, geez, what was that first phase that I need to put them in? You should just know it. You know, oh, they're in the base. Okay. Oh, they're just starting off. They haven't exercised in 15 years. Yeah, they're functional. They need to be in the functional phase. So let's go through this. On the right side, so we looked at it on the left that you have, bottom left again, figure 2.2. Let's just look at that real quick again. Cardiorespiratory training is that first component. And that's, you know, cardiorespiratory training, cardio, we call it. There's the base, the fitness, and the performance. And we'll go through each one separately. And then on the right side of that figure 2.2, you see muscular training, you know, resistance training, right? Functional movement, load, speed. Okay. In the middle there, you're looking at, wait, what's that? ACE mover method? Mark, what's that? That's ACE has that's kind of their method of, if we're going to get you more active, if we're going to help you reach your goals, if we want you to be more fit and work on even performance and everything, here's the method we're going to take you through. Okay. So let's skip over to, not skip, but move on to page 39. And what we're trying to do, and let's just go right to that sentence that says, it's the second sentence, I guess, at the top of page 39, this adaptable program, that sentence, it's used for everyone from previously physically inactive to high performance. That's the cool part, is that I can take someone I haven't worked out in 25 years, put them through this. I can take someone, hey, I play a pro sport, and take them through this. So everyone in between. Okay, that's the great part about this model, is your client will fit somewhere in there, depending on the client, but they will fit in there. Even if they have injury, disease, illness, anything like that, they can still fit in there. There's some separate things you need to know, but it works. So trust the model. All right, page 39, moving on to the heading there, client-centered approach to personal training. See that word again? You probably don't, because I'm pointing at the screen. Sorry. I'm pointing to rapport, okay? And that's another term that they have there, rapport, empathy. Those two terms they've highlighted as definitions. Remember that I said rapport, ding, ding, ding? Yeah, you'll keep seeing that, and everything is built. They will drill it into you. Rapport, 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 everything is rapport. So, and I've been to workshops, review workshops for ACE, and the first word they had on the first slide, it said welcome. And then the next slide, so it's the first word on the second slide. First word just said welcome and they introduced themselves. But the second word, rapport, in big flashing letters. And they left it up there for at least 2 minutes and it was nothing but silence. It was the most awkward thing because there's like 30 of us sitting in a room and they're reviewing for the exam. And it's just, they just stared at us. It was these two presenters and the guys just stared at us for like 2 minutes. And we figured, okay, there's a reason for this. But then we just started getting antsy and we were just looking at each other. And then they finally said, do you trust us now? And we're like, no, not yet. And that was their point, is rapport is not something you just automatically get. Even though they were seen as the professionals, they were teaching us. They had a really cool polos that said ACE on it and everything. You can't build rapport by just force. It's something that needs to be built on. Okay. So that's how important rapport is. So let's move on. But we won't go to the next page yet. We're still on 39 and we're going to go to ACE mover method. You see that little blue box and it's even says introducing the ACE mover method philosophy. So here's the ABC approach that they have. So look at it as at the bottom of that blue box, ABC approach, ask, A for ask, open-ended questions, B for break down barriers, C for collaborate, ABC, right? We got that. And it's founded on these opinions, or not opinions, but these three methods for them. Each professional interaction, client-centered. Everything is the client. Now, it doesn't mean that the client, we know that the client's hiring us, and we know that we're the professional, but what we have to always think about is they're our boss, okay? That's the end thing, is that they hired us to do what's best for them, and they kind of are our boss, even though we're the expert, right? So it's kind of, you have to balance that. Another thing, open-ended questions, active listening, and we're going to go more into what those are, but just remember, open-ended questions, active listening. We have two ears, one mouth. If we don't listen enough, we're ignoring our client. We're not doing what's best for them. And then clients are genuinely viewed as resourceful. Okay? So we need to make sure we're utilizing them as much. Just like we wouldn't want to go to the doctor, and the doctor says, so tell me about your problems. And we start talking, and they cut us off, and they go, yeah, you know what? I don't need to know what you think. And we're thinking, well, okay, I thought, I guess I'm not part of this process at all. We don't want our client to ever think that. We want our client to be invested and know that they're a partner in this, not just being told what to do and dictated what to do. Yes, we will get those clients who say, look, I don't care about, just tell me what to do and I'll do it. I don't need to get involved. That's why I hired you. Cool, that's cool. I will still ask those clients multiple questions. How is this feeling? Do you like this type of exercise? The routine that you're doing on your own, tell me about how it's going. What is your diet like? You know, I need them involved. It doesn't mean that they have to do all of the work. It just means I need to get feedback and get their opinion, their honest feedback and opinion on things. So they are going to be involved, even though they're telling me, just tell me what to do and I'll do it. Okay, cool. And I still will kind of sneakily involve them. Page 40. Page 40 goes a little bit more, and it's a continuation of that ACE mover method explanation, that ABC method, and it just kind of goes into the interactions between it and the opportunities we have as coaches. And building, once again there, see that first line, the first sentence, second line, help build rapport. There it is again. Okay, but asking questions, things like that. And then it mentions we should, in that first paragraph at the end, work with other professionals. I told you before that referring, you can kind of think of it as two things. One, clients are referring other clients to you. But then the other type of referral is we're referring our clients out to professionals who have a better grasp at something specific that's outside of our scope of practice. And that's important too, is work with those other allied health professionals and build that. And when this was probably about 7 or 8 years into my training career, I ended up getting really good friends with someone who is in the physical therapy program at their college, at a local college, someone who is a doctoral program for dietitian at that same college. And we worked out together. And let me tell you, it was the coolest thing. I learned so much from them, because as we're working out, I'm saying, oh, well, this is what I think. And the physical therapist is going, oh, that's not really the best thing for that joint. And here's why. And then the dietitian is going, well, here's what you guys should have eaten, because you didn't eat this. I can tell you that because I can tell by your performance, you know. And so we bounced ideas off of each other. And, you know, I was kind of thinking, like, what am I offering these guys? I'm not even a trainer. You know, I don't have a degree in this. But it was really cool because I was able to offer, well, from the personal training standpoint, when I'm working with a client, this is how I have to explain it. And then they'd be like, oh, my gosh, that makes so much more sense than the clinical method. So things like, you know, you can help each other even though you're thinking, oh, I'm just a trainer. No, you don't say just, be proud of it. I'm a health professional. I'm a fitness professional. I've earned this. And so my whole going off tangent there comes back to the more you can work with other health professionals, the more well-rounded you'll be. Not just to refer clients out, but also because you can bounce ideas off of them if you have a working relationship with them, a professional relationship. And you can call them and say, you know, I'm not breaching anything. You can just say, I have a couple questions. You don't even have to say it's about a client. You can just say, I have a couple questions. You know, what does this exercise do for this joint? Is this good for if someone has this disease or illness? Okay, you don't have to mention a name or even I have a client who just, you can ask questions. And if you have that working professional relationship, they'll be like, yeah, well, here's what you should do. And that's the cool thing, is you can get advice from them and you can bounce ideas off of them. Okay. And then you can see step 1, 2, and 3, asking powerful questions, open-ended. Once again, we'll get into more of that. involving asking questions more, and don't be afraid to keep going about the potential things that could be in their way, roadblocks, things like that. And we want to ask those questions to try to address those roadblocks ahead of time, being proactive. And then step three, we talk about SMART goals. And we will get more into SMART goals. I don't want to jump into it too much here because it's going to really hit it in the other chapters after this. Okay. But just, it's kind of an exciting preview of there's so much that we're going to learn. There's so much you're going to be able to do. Do not feel overwhelmed. Do not feel like this is way too much for me. No, you'll get it. Trust me. All right. We're going to walk through this together. All right. After the blue box, you'll see that last paragraph on page 40, and it kind of goes through the clients want to know their personal trainer cares about them. I couldn't agree more. You should agree with that too. And if you don't care about them, then I don't know. I know it's really kind of rude for me to say, but why do you want to be a personal trainer, right? We should all expect that as trainers, we're caring about our clients. That's probably why we're doing this, is because we love helping other people. Okay. So just be careful that we are not overcomplicating things with them. We don't want to go into, oh, geez, you have anterior pelvic tilt. So though, you know, your psoas is really tight, and psoas is a muscle in case you didn't know. Your psoas is really tight, and you know, your hamstrings obviously are probably constantly firing, but really weak. You know, we don't want to go into that. We can just make things as simple as possible depending on the client. Now, if you do get that cool client who they know exercise, because I've had clients who they might be a cardiologist, or I've had a couple physicians. So I've had professors of biology and anatomy even. And so I've asked them questions, but the cool thing is I can be very technical with them, and they're right at home. They're smiling because they're like, oh, I got it. But then the majority of your clients, you just need to say, oh, well, you know, your hips kind of tilt this way. And because they tilt that way, it's causing a little bit of discomfort to some of the other muscles. And they kind of are getting stretched out too much, and they might not be able to function the way they're supposed to. So breaking it down nice and simple. You know, one of the reasons that you put a lot of pressure on your knees when you squat is because of this, this, and this, without going into the heavy mechanics, without going into the kinesiology. Okay, so know how to do that, because then you relate more, and that's more rapport. Do not make the mistake that I made, where I tried to sound like this Mr. Smart, I know everything. And I would try to be so technical, and all I kept thinking of is, wow, they're going to be so impressed. They're going to have to hire me. And no one hired me because of that. Why? Because one, I'm sure they were thinking, I lost you on when you said femur. I got that, but then after that, you lost me completely. And two, you talk down to me as if I'm dumb. So you don't want to go either direction, because I would either completely dumb it down and I would be like, okay, so your thigh bone, and I would point to my thigh and be like, this is your thigh bone. Or I would go the other extreme and I'd be like, well, your femur and the distal portion of your femur, and then I would lose them. So you really have to find that medium of how can I communicate with them so they know, like, and trust me and don't feel I'm talking down to them or way over their head. Okay. So page 41. That first full paragraph, building rapport, right away it talks about that again. And we'll get more into that in the chapters after this. And that second paragraph, or actually the second full paragraph, that first line that your clients should want to return for the next session, that's your goal. Customer service, results-driven goals and training, and also listening and assessing your client constantly, adapting and adopting what they need and what they want. So those assessments are absolutely mandatory. You see that in the third paragraph. It starts right off saying you have to have quality assessments, and you have to know what to do with those assessments, how to do them, and then what to do with the results. I've had experience, and I've seen a lot of trainers, they have great assessments, but then their routine doesn't match anything they got from the assessments. So it just doesn't make sense. And what I learned quickly is a lot of times trainers don't know how to program or are confused with programming, so they end up giving the client what works for the trainer. This works for me, or this works for a client that's similar to them, I'll just give them this. We want to make sure we're trying to customize things. That's one of the reasons that we are personal trainers, not general or cookie cutter, okay? And then the last paragraph goes into how the model really helps with those options to give more evidence-based assessments or get them through the sessions, and how to progress them, okay? getting feedback from the client on things like posture and joint movement and balance, stuff like that, and then how to put them into practice through the IFT model. All right, let's go on to 42. Page 42, we get into apply what you know, that facilitating behavior change. And the really important thing with that is applying that behavior change strategy to make sure that we can really implement all of the rapport and everything that we're giving with the client. So we're looking at that list of key steps to facilitate fitness-related health behavior change. And some of those steps are actually pretty important. So this is something that you might want to take a look at and be able to recognize some of these. Not going to guarantee it's on the exam, but I'm not going to guarantee it's not on the exam. So I'll leave that up to you. But these are good things for us because we want them to have lifelong permanent behavior changes. So things like creating a caring, supportive climate. We know that for motivation. Designing, leading, and modifying exercise programs. So important. Self-reliance. Fostering that sense of self-reliance. We don't want them to always rely on us for every single workout. Because if they're only going to work out when they're with us, then we're going to need to see them 4 or 5 days a week. Okay. And some clients, we don't want that. We want them to be some self-reliance on there. Otherwise, if they're not, they're going to falter if they're not with us. Some other things like implementing relapse prevention, so being proactive so they're not overtraining or exhausting. And then goals, setting the right goals, preventing overtraining. And that second last one, that says empowering clients. That's so important to empower your client. You never want it to be where it's just you telling the client, here's how it is and that's it. You want them to feel empowered. So not only are they able to be independent, but also they feel completely comfortable giving you honest feedback. Okay. So that empowering does not take away anything from you, but it gives them more valuable input as well as investment into the exercise routine and the training. Okay, so on the bottom of page 42, we get into cardiorespiratory training. And the ACE-IFT model, as you saw, it had two components, cardio and muscular, but then it also has the phases. And in that cardiorespiratory, looking on page 43, you can see the figure 2-3, it has cardiorespiratory, base, fitness, and performance. And so that performance, when we think about all of these bases, we're going to go through all of them. Just know that your client doesn't necessarily need to get to performance, but it's there if they need it. But we'll talk more about that. Okay, so in the cardio training, you have base training. And that's at the page 43 underneath figure 2-3. You'll see base training there. Base training is kind of what it sounds like. It's the base. But we don't want to confuse it with aerobic base training. Aerobic-based training, as you can see in that base training paragraph where the second sentence, this should not be confused with. So don't think aerobic-based training is the same, because aerobic-based training is used more for endurance athletes as kind of for their off-season recovery, what they're doing to get back to that aerobic base or improve that aerobic base. So that way they can keep improving aerobic base, and that's their base, so they can keep improving their performance. Because then kind of they're setting their bar a little higher each season. So don't confuse aerobic base training with base training. Base training is a client looking in that second paragraph under base training where it says any client who is not consistently performing. So that kind of gives you that sentence there that they should be doing 20 minutes, 3 days a week, moderate. If they cannot do that, they need to work up to that. It doesn't mean you can't work with them and you shouldn't work with them. You absolutely should work with them because they need you. But we want to get them at least up to 20 minutes, 3 days a week, moderate intensity, and build from there. Okay. Mark, what if they can only do 10 minutes? You know, that's fine. Start at 10. Then the next week you work to 11 or 12. Then next week you work to 15, but you get them to that 20. And that's like the minimum recommendation that we want to work towards. But it's a good goal because it gives us an idea of how much to jump. If they're doing 15 minutes and they're completely winded and done, if they didn't give us at least a minimum recommendation, we wouldn't know where to go from there. We don't want to jump to 45 minutes, you know, from 15. So let's get them up to 20. And then from 20, we can just slowly increase it according to what we need. Okay. So that just kind of gives you a minimum recommendation of where we want to get them to at least. We don't want to do cardio assessments yet in this base training. So we're not doing anything like there's a Rockport walk test. We're not doing the YMCA 3-minute step test yet. So we just kind of want to do this base training just to make sure we can get them to a minimum level of cardio fitness. Then we can say, okay, now that you're at this minimum level, then we can do that. But let's not worry about that in base training. Let's just get them moving and a little bit more active. At the bottom paragraph there, as it says, they're initially only able to perform 5 minutes, you know, at low or moderate. That's okay. Give them feedback, complete the 5 minutes, and then you can work from there. Okay, so it's never too little. We can keep working them up from there. All right, so that's 43. Let's move on to page 44. And at the top of page 44, it just finishes up talking about base training. And it does go into in that second paragraph there, regardless of the initial duration. If you go through that paragraph, eventually you'll see talk test. The easiest method for monitoring intensity, and it goes into talk test. And the talk test is exactly that, talking. So you're going to see how well can they talk. If they're able to give you full sentences, no problem. All right, then we know that they're okay. If we start getting to where they're getting, I can say one or two words, then I have to take a breath, then I can continue. All right, that's a bit too much. Okay, so we want it so they can actually talk to us and have conversations. Okay, so that's the talk test. So if we went with the rate of perceived exertion, where we're saying on a scale of 0 to 10, 10 is I am dying. 0 is I'm on a sofa, just laying there. So what would it be? And we want them to say a 3 to 4. Okay. Now take for, you know, there's some people who will say, oh yeah, I'm a 9. And it's like, we haven't even started yet. You just walked over to the treadmill, you know? And then you'll have some people who are like, oh, I'm a 2. I'm only at a 2. And they're physically almost falling over. So, you know, use the talk test because that doesn't lie. But if you use both of those together, it is even better. They talk about VT1 also. I'm not going to get into that too much because that gets a little more complicated because we will talk about that more. But just know VT1 is where they start at least having some labored breathing. That's as far as we need to get into it. The ACE Essentials of Exercise Science, if you did look into that, they talk about VT1, the ventilatory threshold 1, and kind of where that starts accumulating, you know, lactate and stuff like that. So, but just simple put, when they first start having labored breathing, you're most likely at VT1, okay? So we don't want to go past VT1. We want to be below VT1. And on a scale of 10, a 3 to 4. All right, so that goes now into fitness training. So that's that, you know, that middle ground under cardiorespiratory training. So fitness training, we're trying to get them aerobically efficient. We're staying between VT1 and VT2. So they've labored breathing, but they can still breathe and talk. And they're not gasping yet. Okay, so staying between those. We don't want to push them too far where they're either failing or that they're like, okay, I'm dead. And they can hardly talk. So keep them somewhere in between there. And you're, in the beginning, you're going to either, you might end up playing too conservative, or you might end up pushing them too much. And that's, I'm not going to say that's okay, but it's a learning experience too as a trainer. But very soon you're going to start realizing, okay, they said they're at a 2. I can tell they're at a 9. We're done. Okay, we're going to back off a lot. So you'll really, really be able to tell not just from what they're saying, but also how they're saying it. That's the cool part. Okay. And what we're trying to do is get them, we can start doing a little bit more intense. We're trying to get some adaptation to exercise. We're trying to increase their fitness level overall. This is where we can start really focusing if they want to burn fat more, because we can go a little more intense. We can burn some more calories. So that type of thing. So it's going to be appropriate to the client. And we want to make sure that they're set up for whatever goal they have. And at the last paragraph under fitness training, individuals' goals for fitness training will vary. And we know that. So we have to look at what's the best for the client as far as that fits, and then that VP, you know, the frequency and all of the intensity and the time and the type and everything like that. So we need to make sure that we train them for what they want to. Because in this one, they might say, I want to run a 5K. And in the last paragraph there, they mention a 10K or a marathon. So we have to make sure we train them for that. So we're not going to do short bursts of high intensity. We're going to do longer duration. And that's okay because we're past the base training. So now they're able to handle more intensity or longer duration at a lower intensity. Okay? Just make sure it fits to the client's goals and the progression you've taken them to. And then we get into performance training at the top of page 45. And this performance training, everybody, even I did in the beginning of my career, you just want to jump to this. It's the cool stuff, right? Oh, burpees, and they're sweating like crazy. They're walking away going, oh my gosh, I'm so sore. You burned so many calories. You kicked my butt. Everyone loves that glory. Okay, we're going to do a ton of landmine. We're going to do TRX, and we're going to do fancy stuff like that. But we forget that they're not ready for that. And yes, I've had clients where I pushed them too far too fast, and unfortunately, they're throwing up. They're getting dizzy. They're getting lightheaded. And in the beginning of my career, that arrogant little trainer I was, it's like, oh, come on, they got to toughen up. They could do this. And I would almost, unfortunately, ignore that they can't handle this. And I'd be like, come on, you can do this. So the smarter trainer, I will say, will not push them to that point. They'll progress them to that point, not just shove them over there. So that's why we have a progression in cardiorespiratory, which I ignored. I thought, okay, resistance training, yeah, I can see where you have that. But cardio, I just kind of pushed them through it. No, you have to build that base. Just like anything with the body, you have to build up to it, okay? You can't go from kindergarten to college. Well, you know, maybe Doogie Howser, and I'm sure there's some of you are listening who are like, who? Well, anyway, that dates me. That shows my age, but you need to make sure there's progression. That's so important. So at the top of page 45, as we get into that performance training, we're looking that now we have things that are more for endurance, sports events, you know, and for performance and things like cycling, swimming. They give examples like that. Now, it can be someone who they just want to move there. They just want to do that. So let's say they want to do like a mud run, or they want to just do, I just want more explosive power. And you've taken them through the other two. That's okay. Now you can bring in the performance. They don't have to be an athlete or doing athletics, okay? Just make sure you've progressed to them. That's the biggest thing. Now, when you get to performance training, one of the reasons you have to be progressed is we're pushing them to that VT2 or failure, basically, and even beyond. So we're pushing them to where the body's going, look, I can't keep up with the demand for energy and for oxygen. We can't keep going. So you might push them to that point. So they need to be ready for that. And then you need to be smart about the recovery so you get enough time to be able to give full effort again. Okay? So table 2-2 at the bottom of 45 gives you a really good idea of the base, the fitness, and the performance training and the cardiorespiratory training, that table there. And it kind of gives you the highlighted points. This is a good table to really know. These are the type of things that if I was writing an exam, I would say, yeah, we're asking them about these points in base training, like the focus on moderate, keep intensities, increase duration, progress to fitness training. For fitness training, you should know the progress to cardiorespiratory exercise during, and then integrate vigorous intensity, you know, an RPE 5-6, that kind of thing, where it is as regards to VT1 and 2. And then performance, you should know progress moderate to vigorous, sufficient volume, near maximal, and then where it is in regards to VT1 and 2. Okay, so table 2-2 gives a great summary that if I were to give you another ding, 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 there it is. All right, 46. We've talked about cardio. Okay, we went through a lot with cardio. And remember, if you need breaks from this, absolutely take a break, come back to it. Just remember where you left off and pick up, because this is a lot of content. So I don't want you to get overwhelmed, and I also don't want you to zone out too much, because trust me, I do it too. So I'm right there with you that it's easy to zone out and be like, oh man, I got to rewind this. What did they say again for the last 10 minutes? So, and sometimes I just get lost in thought, like, oh, you know, I'm started thinking about something someone said, and so I'm going off in my own little tangent, and then 15 minutes later, I'm like, wait, I just missed what they said for 15 minutes, but I had some really cool other thoughts. So that's fine. Just if you need to review and rewind, cool. Muscular training. As we get into that on page 46, if you notice in that first paragraph, it says kinetic chain. You'll see that a lot. You'll hear that a lot, especially now in the training industry. That is something that I'm not going to say it's a fad, because it isn't a fad that's going to come and go. It's an awareness that is crucial that we understand that the kinetic chain, meaning that everything in our body is directly or indirectly connected, and everything in our body can affect it, another link in that chain. Meaning the whole chain's affected. So just know that you're gonna see kinetic chain a lot and how our body moves and posture and performance, okay? Noting that figure 2-4, you started in the muscular training with functional, moving to movement, and then load and speed. So what does that mean? What's functional? Well, look at the bottom of page 46, you'll see functional training. And it goes through that establishing or reestablishing stability and kinetic chain mobility. And you'll see some key things: muscular endurance, flexibility, core function. And when I was starting off with training, everyone said core. I'm like, yeah, let's do abs. And I would say, okay, client, do abs. Let's get crunches going because that's core. And that's all I did. And there are so many things that if I wish I could go back and just reteach myself everything, I would have been such a better trainer. But I had to learn all this stuff before they had really comprehensive materials or people who could explain this in these type of resources like audio lectures and stuff. But when you think about static and dynamic balance, when you think about core and things like that, core is anything that, and as we'll go into it more, but core is anything that basically controls your spine and your hips. So that's core. How important is that? Very, very. Static balance, dynamic balance, no one thought of that in the 70s, 80s, even the 90s really with training, with personal trainers. Everyone thought, oh, that's physical therapy. That's athletic performance. That's the strength coaches. That's not us as trainers. What I love is that now as trainers, we realize, look, we're working with the masses. We're working with the general public and beyond, and specific public demographics even. So we need to implement this to everyone. We can't wait till people are hurt to get them this stuff. We need to get it so they don't get hurt. So you can see that functional training is that goal. Let's make sure that before we go intense, they can handle it. Okay? So we're working on just those basic functional movements in the body, such as stability, making sure our spine can handle things, making sure our joints know what they're supposed to do during certain motions, whether it's movement or staying in place. So once we establish that, let's go to page 47. We can see movement training heading. And that talks about there are 5 primary movement patterns. And they're very good movement patterns. Looking at figure 2-5, they give 5 really good examples of those movement patterns in the picture. So looking at bend and lift movement is A. And it's just the same thing. We pick up keys off the ground, groceries, boxes. We bend down the tire sneakers. B, single leg movements. So we're walking. And you're thinking, well, walking, are we single leg? Absolutely. Every time we take a step, one leg's in the air, one leg's on the ground. We go up steps, one leg's in the air, one leg's on the ground. We go into our car, one leg is in the air, and then it goes on to the floor of the car, and we sit down, but then we lift the other leg. So it is one leg, even though we might be seated. So yeah, there's a lot of single leg movements. Pushing movements, just like they're pushing the carts in that figure. We could be pushing the car door closed. We could be pushing our way from a desk if we're sitting, things like that. Pulling movements, whether it's pulling that chain down to close the door in that picture for D in figure 2-5, or whether it's pulling something towards us, whether it's reaching across and pulling the seatbelt across us. You know, all of those type of things are pulling movements. And when we think about pushing and pulling, pushing is when we move something away from our body or we keep it distanced from our body. Pulling is trying to get something closer to our body. Okay, rotational movements is anytime we rotate, any type of rotation. And rotation, think about it, if it's on an axis, it rotates. So when we turn in the, like the lady in figure E, she's turning around in her car to look behind her to see if another car is coming or such. That's rotation. Anyone calls our name, we turn our head. That's rotation. Every time we turn the key in the keyhole to open the door, that's rotation of the forearm. So there's all types of rotation in our body. So if we stick to these 5 primary movements and we try to get our clients to move through all of these, we're going to be in good, well, I hate to use the pun, but we're in good shape then, okay? And I promise my puns will be sparingly used, okay? Now on page 48, we move on to, once we've gone through that second phase of movement, we're going on to load and speed training. And at the bottom of page 48, you can see that it starts off broad focus of load speed training. What we're doing now is we're adding a lot of external loads. And then we're also trying to produce force. So those are our two things, is using resistance training with external loads. So it's not really just body weight training. Remember that first phase, we want to go through stability. So we're not doing too much movement. We're really just trying to stabilize. The second phase, we're going through full movement, but we're not always using weights or heavy weights or anything like that. We're just trying to use more body weight. Now this third phase, the load and speed training, we're really getting into, let's use weight, let's use resistance, and let's try to produce force and also work on deceleration too. Okay. In the second paragraph on the bottom of page 48 under load and speed training, you'll see as with movement training, Load speed training should integrate functional training. So once again, ask yourself, why am I doing these exercises? Because if there's not a really good why reason, then you don't need to do it, okay? Going on to page 49, you can see a figure 2-6, figure 2-7. These are examples of the type of movements. You see a lunge with rotation. So now we're doing a bend and lift almost with the lower body, that lunge. And then the upper body is doing a rotation. So we're doing two planes of motion there. And then the kettlebell swing. So now we're producing force, accelerating, and then we're absorbing with the deceleration when it comes down so the dumbbell doesn't pull us over. So that type of thing. And then the underneath those two figures on page 49, it talks about muscular endurance, muscular strength, muscle hypertrophy, which is highlighted, and body composition, which is highlighted. So muscle hypertrophy is muscle cell growth. So the actual muscle cell is growing in size, not in number. That's hyperplasia. But hypertrophy is the cell size grows. The fibers are growing. So that's called hypertrophy. Atrophy is it's shrinking, the opposite, or it's losing or reducing. When we look at body composition, that is basically how much of our body is made up of fat or lean mass. Okay, so what body fat percent or body composition? What's the composition of our body? And then also in the last paragraph on page 49, it starts talking about athletic performance goals. So we can go speed, agility, quickness, power. Honestly, I love training that stuff for myself and for my clients because it's fun. It really is. But coordination, so make sure they have the base. So don't just jump to this stuff. This is the flashy stuff that when I first started training, this is all it was. You know, my client could have not worked out for 25 years. And I'm like, all right, let's just do burpees. Let's do, you know, a bunch of jump squats and things like that. And yeah, it kicked their butt. It got them sweating. But at what cost? Risk versus reward, right? So now it makes me realize, you know what? When they were doing it back then, their knees were caving in and they were just completely a mess. They weren't ready for it. Here, now they're ready for it. So now they can do these high explosive movements if needed, performance movements if they needed, and their body's going, yeah, we can handle this. We're not hurting. We're good. You know, our joints aren't in pain. And then going on page 50, if you look at 2-3, table 2-3, it does exactly what it did for cardio. Functional movement and load and speed training. Cool chart that I will give you a ding, ding, ding. Know this. You do have to know this because this is the same thing that they're going to ask questions of a scenario, a quick scenario, and then you have to know which functional or which phase they're in the component of muscular training. Are they in the functional because they're doing establishing or reestablishing posture and alignment? They're doing core functionality and stabilization. They're doing body weight only. But there's little to no movement, and are they progressing in volume and challenges function, more function than movement, then they're functional. If they're doing some things like just movement patterns while maintaining stability, if they're doing things where they're adding a little bit more movement, but they're not adding a lot of weight or minimal weight at all, then that's movement. If they're really just focusing on the five primary movements and not accelerating or producing force, movement training, things like that. If they're producing force, they're doing jumps, they're doing patterns with like deadlift and heavy squats, they're doing maybe supersets with a heavy weight and then a lightweight or explosive movements like jump squats and burpees. If they're doing speed and agility things for performance, then we know they're in load and speed training. So be able to recognize that because you need to know that for the test and you should know this when you train the client. Okay. If you look at the ACE sponsored research with the little magnifying glass, ACE does a lot of research, which is pretty cool. You know, they're not the only ones. There's other organizations to do it, but ACE, I'm very happy with their research because they do love doing research and studies. So this was one study they did. You see effectiveness of the ACE integrated fitness training model. And all they do is talk about, it just gives you further proof of, yes, we tested this model, the IFT model, and the phases and the component to make sure it's effective. So we've done tests on this. Science backs it up, and we've done our own research to prove it to ourselves and for everyone's information. And I'm not going to go through the actual details, but on page 50 and 51, they talk about and they even show you some of the individual results of the people that they've done the studies on with body fat percent, fat mass, fat-free mass, and you know lean mass, blood pressure, things like that. But basically, they showed a positive improvement for people who used, more improvement for people who used the IFT model compared to people who did not. Okay, so that's page 50 and 51. And then 52, they finish up that study just saying, here's the conclusions. And if you look at table 2.4 on page 52, it just gives you a little bit further breakdown of what the improvements were for cardio, anthropometric, which is like waist measurements and body fat, and then muscular response. And then the conclusions. Okay. That brings us through the end of the chapter there. So we did talk about a lot of things, such as the kind of the considerations of the type of clients we're training now compared to what we used to, the evolution of personal training as a whole, the ACE-IFT model, you have those two components and then three phases in each, and then how to address each one, knowing where the client is, taking them through that progression, and recognize what phase you're in by the characteristics of that phase. So make sure that after you finish listening to this, you've already done the slideshow presentation. If you haven't, do that. Make sure you do that chapter assignment, then listen to the audio explanation of the chapter assignment, then make sure you do that chapter quiz. As always, if you have questions, please reach out. I'm really hoping that you're enjoying these, that you're getting some good information, and that some of this is giving you a little bit of an insight that you might not just get from reading, and that you're not sick of me yet, because we still have, 14 chapters to go? So I'm hoping that you're hanging in there. And like I said, take those breaks as you need to. Listen to 10, 15, 20 minutes. Listen to the whole thing. It doesn't matter, but it does matter to me. I want you to listen to as much as you can, but retain this and understand it, and then take your breaks as needed and come back. I'm going to be here no matter what. So stay motivated. Reach out if you have questions. Finish up all of the other stuff that you need to for this chapter, and I will see you at chapter 3. Thank you very much.